Welcome to Discoville, where we will be discussing Star Trek, Discovery, and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at the deeper messages and morals of these two different television series as they introduce us to new and exciting stories and locations and much more. This is Discoville Episode 2, A Million Ways to Die in Space. I'm Kevin, one of your hosts here on Discoville, but I don't do this alone. With me, as always, is my co-pilot, Norm. Welcome, Norm.
Kev, I have this really interesting thing. I have a problem. I have a very serious problem.
No, oh, man. What you got? What you got?
I have a giant jar of pickles that someone needs to open.
I got an idea of who can help us open that up. And he is our co-founder of the Fandom Podcast Network. We got a guest star here. Also, my co-host of Culture Clash and The End Zone, Mr. Kyle Wagner. Can you help me with this jar of pickles?
Oh, that is why I am here. I am here specifically to open a jar of pickles. Now, does somebody have a hammer?
Is that the thing? Is that like the running joke?
Yeah, every time now. He asks her to open a door. He asks, hey, can you open this jar of pickles?
I wonder if he's going to like start asking it in a different way. He's just going to go, pickles? Or she's awesome. Going to go, I got this pickles.
Pickles.
All right. I want to thank all the fans. We've got a lot of new fans jumping in because everyone's really excited about Star Trek Discovery and Discoville and our podcast covering Discovery and, of course, the Orville. You can get a hold of us and find Discoville on the subspace channels. fpnet.podbean.com is where you'll find the Fandom Podcast Network master feed. You can also find us on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play for Android users. On Twitter, we are at DiscovillePod. On Instagram, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. And also on Facebook. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com, or you can email us directly here at Discoville at discovillepodcast@gmail.com. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you?
You can find me at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
Kyle, where can we find you on Instagram?
You can find me on Instagram at AKyleFandom and on Twitter at AKyleW.
All right, very cool. We'd also like to remind our listeners, please visit our TeePublic store where you can help support the Fandom Podcast Network while wearing your favorite show logos with pride. Just go on to teepublic.com and search Fandom Podcast Network, and I'm sure we're going to find a logo for Discoville in the near future.
I'm working on it. I just need to have the Planetary Union approve that.
Understood. And please head on to iTunes and search Fandom Podcast Network, and please leave us a review if you're listening to Orville, the Orville and Star Trek Discovery podcast here, Discoville. Please leave us a message in your review as well. Let us know how we're doing.
Can I make one small observation here? Every single time that we say Discoville, the three of us just smile so widely. It's such a joy to be able to talk about Star Trek and the Orville in this context, because it just makes us smile. Isn't that what this is all about?
I think this is a great time in entertainment where we get two related shows in the same week, and we can both enjoy watching Star Trek and, of course, a Star Trek inspired show called The Orville. What about you, Kyle? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's great because they're so different too. And I brought this up to Norman before the podcast. I know I really feel, and I'm curious what you guys think on this. I almost feel like Orville is the more true Star Trek show, while Discovery is its own brand new creature.
I have things to say about that, but I will save that until the end.
That's a good point, Norman. We will answer that question because I have a few things I'd like to say as well.
Very good.
Well, we'd like to head on to the Officers Lounge here, because here in the Officers Lounge, your Discoville crew will debrief you on the most current episodes of both the Orville and Star Trek Discovery. This is a spoiler-heavy discussion, so if you've not seen these episodes, please pause the show, watch these episodes, and then come back and enjoy our discussion. Well, this week on Orville is episode 5 called Priya, and it's directed by Jonathan Frakes. I think we know who Jonathan Frakes is, Normie.
Jonathan Frakes is pretty much about as Star Trek royalty as Star Trek royalty gets, because Jonathan Frakes, it's Commander William Riker. He's number one. But also, Jonathan Frakes shouldn't be defined just by his role as number one in The Next Generation. I mean, he is a director par excellence, although a lot of his directorial work that we love, you know, has to do with Star Trek. So I think that Seth MacFarlane was really smart in aligning himself with a lot of Star Trek alumni. He had Brian Braga direct an episode. He had Robert Duncan McNeil direct an episode. And now he has Jonathan Frakes directing an episode. These are heavy hitters in terms of Star Trek fandom, right? So you're going to get Star Trek flavor, you know, when it comes to the production of these episodes, you know, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, well said. Well, let's give a little brief synopsis here on the episode. It's called Priya. Captain Ed Mercer becomes smitten with Priya Levesque, played by Charlize Theron, who he co-starred with in a Western called A Million Ways to Die in the West. She is a captain of a stranded ship, but Commander Kelly Grayson suspects all is not what it seems. Is Kelly being a paranoid ex-wife, or is there a greater scheme being hatched by Priya regarding a stable wormhole? Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, temporal dynamics, and relic hunting? Meanwhile, Isaac gets a leg up on Lieutenant Gordon Malloy as he's learning about the finer points regarding human practical jokes. Well said, Norman.
I have to laugh at that. And that's why I love the Orville. It's laugh out loud funny stuff. Yeah.
Well, let's start our group discussion here. We'll profile a specific character, idea, event, or element that stood out in these episodes. And I'll go first here, and I'm going to start off with that practical joke subplot. This is one of the things I love about Orville, is you get the regular guy speak, or girls. And we love Malloy, and apparently he loves practical jokes. And, of course, we saw Isaac come in, not knowing that he had Mr. Potato Head parts attached to his head. And he tries to explain the joke, and Malloy says, well, now it's your turn. You have to get me when I least expect it. And Isaac does that in full turn and removes his leg. And, you know, of course, Malloy was very, very angry. But I got to mention something here. Mm-hmm. I love the scene. And this is one of these small little character scenes that, you know, might be a throwaway thing. But there's the scene where Malloy is in, I guess, the hospital part there. And
by the way, Kevin, I just want to interrupt for a second. How awesome was the medical synthesized unit, the way that it was like structured? It looked exactly like Next Generation tech.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. I love the whole med room. And the scene that I'm talking about is when Isaac is like pronounced dead, basically, because of what happened to him.
Yeah.
But I like that scene when Malloy's looking at it going, I don't know if you can hear me, but I got to tell you, that was the best practical joke of all time. And what I really liked about that was that the writers were smart to kind of ease the anger that he might have been feeling, and also bring a little bit of humanity to not just both that particular scene, but to someone who's also an artificial being. So I thought that was a great scene. Norman, what about you? What's your pick?
Well, oh my gosh, there are so many feels in this episode, right? I think, well, personally for me, I mean, I loved the practical joke. I mean, it's something that you don't see in Star Trek. Well, okay, so should I address this now? I guess I should address this now.
Yeah, you gotta do it, man.
Okay, so the Orville in and of itself is being so directly compared to Star Trek. And I don't think that it's unfair to say so, because I think that Seth MacFarlane is actually trying to emulate something that was very meaningful to him, which was the Star Trek genre of the 1990s. I mean, that's where a lot of our fandom came from. Kevin, I know for you, that's huge, because you worked for Decipher. Star Trek The Next Generation was a huge proponent of what Decipher's products were all about. I know, Kevin, Kyle, that you were a big fan of like Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager. That's where this era comes from, what Seth MacFarlane is trying to emulate. So when I say that he's pulling a lot from that era, it's true, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much inspired from it. I know you feel that way, right, Kyle?
Oh, yeah, very much so. And it becomes more obvious every week of the inspiration of especially Next Generation, because each episode has that feel. And I think as it's found its footing, it's done a great job of making its own world, but still honoring that Next Generation feel to it as well.
So, I mean, going back to your original point, Kevin, I mean, like my pick for this, I know that you love the subplot of Malloy's leg, which was awesome, by the way. I mean, that's the laugh out loud moment. But for me, I think that the aspect of Priya, it introduced something that I wasn't quite sure I was on board with, and that has to do with time travel. Because time travel in science fiction, especially in Star Trek, and I'm not saying that this is Star Trek, but it is spiritually Star Trek, time travel is something that is very, very particular when it comes to the fans. Because on social media, all of a sudden, as soon as they introduced time travel, it was, well, why doesn't he remember this? Or how could this be? Or why do things still exist? And blah, blah, blah. But for me, when I saw that particular aspect of this episode, I'm like, okay, I'm paying particular attention to the resolution of time travel. And for me, it works, because the way that I saw it, the stable wormhole that allowed Priya to come back in time to appropriate the Orville that should have been destroyed and becomes an antiquity that needs to be forwarded in time to a buyer, that makes sense to me. And destroying that wormhole and destroying Priya's preexistence doesn't necessarily disavow the Orville's preexistence. So, yes, Kyle, you and I are big Doctor Who fans. It's a wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey thing. What did you think about that?
Well, it's actually a good point, Norman, because this is one of the things I was going to pick myself, and it kind of ties into that was, and it's one thing the Orville, I think, does really good is these little tiny moments that you catch throughout the show. The fact that our captain basically confiscates her transporter tech, and she's like, oh, are you going to reverse our engineer? And I was like, no, I'm not. And then he just throws it in his desk.
But like, it's still there. Right? It's like throwing it into the junk drawer, right? We all have a junk drawer with like our half teaspoon
it's
of
next
whatever.
To the batteries, the rubber bands, the keys you don't know what open up.
Hashtag Captain Mercer's front desk drawer, right? So, I mean, like, what else is going to be in that front desk drawer? Because it's not like he took a piece of tech, right, from the 29th century that means everything, and he just throws it in there. So, are we dealing with a non-serious approach to probably the most serious thing in fandom, which is affecting time travel?
Well, it's interesting because what I like about this thing, and the one thing that I love that we have not run into yet, is a rule book that is governed by a prime directive that Star Trek is.
Right.
It just seems like, and I'm looking back to the first episode where they have like 3,000 ships and they need to fill them all. And it seems like they just want to get people on these ships exploring.
Right.
And, you know, yes, there's a chain of command and stuff like that, but they don't seem to have these regulations that we're used to Star Trek having. And I love that fact. And the fact that he comes across this transporter tech device and shoves it in his drawer, I can't wait to see that come back.
I mean, that's a fair point to say. I mean, Kyle, you didn't get a chance to weigh on this on episode one. So what do you think about the way that the Orville is being presented as Star Trek, but not Star Trek?
Well, before I answer that, I have a question for each of you.
Oh. Would
you guys like a Junior Mint?
I would like a Junior Mint.
Yes, I would.
I definitely would like to slap a Junior Mint out of Kevin's hands and fall it into a cadaver that's going to be sewn up. So.
I love that Seinfeld opening. That was
right?
Great.
Yeah.
No, I think the Orville is handling itself brilliantly, to be honest with you. I think it's paying a very true homage to Star Trek, but it's still creating its own unique voice. And I think that's what makes it so good. And it's not a, you know, Kevin brought this up when we did our Discovery special with the Orville and Discovery. And I think it rings so true. It's what if we were on a 24th century starship right now? What kind of conversation would we be having?
Okay, so wait, hold on a second. I got to interview you there because there's something that really just like made sense to me all of a sudden. Do you guys know that there's a video game out there in VR called Star Trek Bridge Crew?
Yes, familiar with it.
Yeah. Have you played any? Have any of you played that yet? Have any of our listeners played that yet?
No, I have not.
I have not.
So imagine this. Okay, so you, Kevin, you, me, Kyle, and say let's bring Clifton in for the sake of argument, and maybe Adam O'Brien. Okay, we're not Starfleet. Okay, we don't have the vocabulary of Starfleet. But we have to act in a very Starfleet-esque manner. But we're just people from the 20th century. We're just men from the 20th century or in the 21st century. 21st century? 20th century? You know, so we're just talking. It's like, Captain, what do I do? I don't know. Like, raise shields? I don't know. Is that an alien being? I don't know. What do we do? Fire? So the Orville to me is like listening to people play Star Trek Bridge Crew because we're not polished Starfleet. We're not that group of people. We're normal people. We're normal blue collar Joes, right? I think
that's one of the appeals of the Orville is that you get a mix of it. That's where it feels more realistic, to be perfectly honest with you. And I touched on this when we did the special, the Orville and Discovery special, where, you know, Star Trek Next Generation, a lot of Star Trek's is very kind of sterile and rigid when it comes to certain rules, and that, you know, the humor is kind of kept to a certain amount, where that's not what it's going to be like in, you know, 400 years, honestly. The technology might be similar, but we're still going to be joking around. We're still going to have these human emotions and issues and breakups and divorces and stuff like that. And so that's what I love about it. It's very, very funny. It's realistic in that way, because I guarantee you in 400 years, people are still going to be watching Seinfeld.
Okay, so before we change topics, because we're a show that deals with both the Discovery and Orville. Staying on the Orville here, having Charlize Theron. I mean, she is an Academy Award winning actress. She is gravitas in gravitas incarnate. What do you think that she brought to this show as Captain Pri Levesque? Do you think that she's too big for TV, or do you think that she brings the kind of weight and performance quality that anchors a show like this, that allows Seth MacFarlane to say, hey, you know what? I brought in Liam Neeson in the last episode, who was also in A Million Ways to Die in the West, and I'm bringing in Charlize Theron in this episode that also is in A Million Ways to Die in the West, or A Thousand Ways to Die in the West. So what does an actress of this quality do to a show like this? Kevin, I'd like to ask you first.
Okay. Yeah, obviously Seth MacFarlane is pulling in his friends to do this, but I think it's more than that, because I think that they believe in this project that he's doing, and whether or not he's flexing his star muscle and getting in past co-stars, I think is great. As for Charlize, I think this is great that she can do this, because I love it when you see famous actors and actresses who have, you know, awards and accolades and this, you know, this great movie thing going on, yet they will still take time to go ahead and do a television program, not like a live interview or something like that, but actually do a television program. And I think that's great. And I think this is something that, to be honest with you, it's one of those appeals too, that I think stars get when they do Saturday Night Live. And this is one of those shows, Saturday Night Live, that every star would love to do, because it also helps promote what they're doing. But I also think that to get someone like Charlize Theron on Orville, I think this means the door will be open for a lot of really cool stars that we may not expect to have a television guest star will come right on in. Kyle, what about you, man? What do you think?
Well, you hit on a point. this is how I feel about it too. This is also something where you have Seth MacFarlane obviously pulling in his friends. Let's not forget Jon Favreau is also a producer on this show. So that's a lot of gravitas pulling people in.
This is true. Yeah, it's a good point.
But one of the things that I've liked from every guest appearance we've had, whether it's been a smaller guest appearance by like Victor Garber in season one, all of these actors are coming in and you can just feel it in their performance. There's no ego involved. There's no nothing. They're going there and they're just having a good time with this. And I think that's because of their trust in not only Jon Favreau, but also in Seth MacFarlane to know he's not going to put them in this compromising position, that they trust him. And I think that inspires the great performances like we had. I mean, Charlize Theron just walked right in. And, you know, sometimes you get a major actor on a show and they just it feels awkward. There are just times where it just feels awkward. And Charlize Theron fit right in. Like, she was just one of the cast. She'd made appearances before, and it was just amazing to see. And I think you're going to see that constantly going forward with the Orville. And that's the one advantage with the heavy hitters that are involved, like Seth MacFarlane, that you're going to have. I think we're going to just get great guest stars throughout the season. And I think we're even more in a treat of more surprise guest stars, like the Jeffrey Tambor guest star in season two or in episode two.
Right. No, I completely agree. And it's one of the things that's really exciting about it. But I love the fact that no matter who they get on, I don't think it will overshadow the rest of the crew, the brilliant writing, the direction, the acting, and just the overall production of the show. So I'm really, really excited about the rest of this season. Hopefully, we'll get news that will be picked up for a second season. Well, now I think it's time to go ahead and switch gears here and jump onto another ship. Let's talk about Star Trek Discovery. This is like you mentioned earlier, Kyle, this is something that is new to Star Trek. We're getting a different side of Star Trek here. And we're talking about episode 4, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. Michael Burnham begins her active duty with her first mission to study the tardigrade / nicknamed Ripper, the creature that they have on board, and find Captain Lorca, a physical weapon that can be used in the Klingon War. But what if its weapons aren't claws or fangs, but something abstract? Burnham discovers that the creature is attracted to the spores and can symbiotically talk to the spore network and align the jump engines to save the dilithium colony on Korvan 2. But at what cost? Because it is apparent that every spore engine jump seems to physically torture Ripper. Meanwhile, VOQ, Volk, the son of no one that is stranded on the USS Shenzhou after his authority is undermined by Cole, who needs T'Kuvna's flagship for its advanced cloaking technology. Guys, this was really cool. We got a little peek into the Klingon side of things here. We're going to again talk, we're going to profile specific characters and ideas and events and elements that stood out in this episode. And Kyle, actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to start with you first on this one.
Okay. I think I mentioned this a little earlier, how Star Trek Discovery is different than anything we've seen from Star Trek before. And there's a couple moments in this that really stood out to me. One is when the Klingons are having a discussion and what became of our now deceased Captain Gregory's brain. That was a little shocking, I will say the least.
Yeah.
And one thing Discovery did, and I actually think it's a very smart move on their part, we now know nobody is safe on this show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'll tell you the one thing too with this episode that I thought was a couple of things that I thought were handled brilliantly. I loved how kind of at the beginning with Burnham, her acting was so good. Just the doubt she had about maybe putting on the Starfleet uniform again, and you could really just see that in her just facial expression. And I don't know about you guys, and I'm kind of curious about your take on this. For a lot of this episode, when they were talking about Ripper and where did he come from? How is he on the ship? And she mentions the fact that he's very reminiscent of microorganisms on Earth. I'm kind of thinking, well, when they did one of these jumps, did it affect a microorganism that was attached to one of the spores and create Ripper from a microorganism? It was just kind of in the back of my mind the whole episode until we got some reveals a little bit later on. But I thought they handled that very on the low key until they made that reveal. But everything with this episode, it's just Discovery waking one step more and saying, this is not the Star Trek you know, but you're going to really love this because we're going to keep you on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Yeah, good point. Norm, what about you? What stands out to you?
So the most interesting thing about this episode, I think, is the actual tardigrade alien. Because in understanding this alien, we understand the motivations of what Starfleet is being influenced by at this time. The tardigrade is not an aggressive species. Ripper is not an aggressive species. We are informed of this particular alien race by what it has done, but not necessarily by what it is. And I think that is the most it's the most profound Star Trek moment at this time. And I love that Michael Burnham is at the forefront of saying this, because what she is saying essentially is Star Trek. The package, the delivery system, the outward appearance, our first expression, our first understanding of an alien species does not define the species. It's what may be our experience, but it does not define what the species is. And the tardigrade, i.e. Ripper, yes, it is violent. And in the previous episode, Context is Kings, yes, it decimated an entire ship. It tore through Klingons. It tore through the steel of the ship, of the USS Glenn. But it doesn't make it warlike. It doesn't make it violent. It makes it defensive. Right?
Yeah.
So when you're watching that part, you're watching Burnham kind of like pull that apart. She's like, that's not what the species is about. Right? You're only seeing it at its worst, but you're not seeing it at its best. And I think that's the most Star Trek part about this episode, is when Burnham finds the capacity to find this species at its best. And when she connects the spores to it, what this creature can do, the network that it can connect to. When I saw that, I'm like, wow, that is Star Trek. That is primarily Star Trek at its very best.
That's excellent point and insight there, Norm. Yeah, wow. Well, okay, the thing that stands out for me, I'm sorry, is one of the biggest things to me, and it answered some questions of why it looked the way it looked. Can we please talk about the Discovery ship itself and stuff that spins?
the spinning outward disc? Yeah.
The spinning outward disc. And then when it made the jump into the spore warp speed thing, mm-hmm. it looked like it was almost transforming, like a transformer, and it just pops and it's gone. That was pretty effing cool.
We've never seen that before. I mean, we've no. never seen a propulsion system that is more advanced than, say, hyper warp drive or trans warp drive. You know, so this whole spores thing, it has a cost. I have so many feelings about that. It has a cost.
Now, I've got a question for you, because one of the things I'm liking about this is the Ripper and the relationship that Michael Burnham is now having with it, and that she can now somewhat approach it safely and give it the spores or the food that it needs, mm-hmm. nutrients. Commander Landry was attacked. I'm trying to remember because I've only seen it once. Is she going to be okay?
No, not really. Kyle, go ahead.
Commander Landry is not gonna be with us, but I want to bring up something to Norm's point, and I'm curious on both of your guys' take on this. Do you think with what kind of things are happening with Discovery as far as the apparent torture of Ripper and a few other things, do you think what Discovery is doing is maybe setting itself up that this is why Starfleet created some of the rules we see later in Star Trek?
That's a very good question, Kyle. And that's a very responsible question in terms of thinking about Star Trek, in terms of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek, because if I may be long-winded here, and I know that I can be,
Go ahead, Norm.
Okay, so when we see what happens to Ripper and the employee that he is being demanded of when, in terms of this spore drive, there's a technology that plugs into the species that forces it to capitulate towards this technology. And it doesn't have a choice, right? It doesn't have a choice. It eventually becomes a slave to what the Federation needs at this time. So is that the right thing to do? Is that the wartime thing to do? And what happens when we are torturing alien species, sentient species, to do the bidding in order to win the war? I've actually said this on several times on different social media feeds that there was an episode in Star Trek Enterprise where, and it's in season three, it's the episode Damage, where Captain Archer appropriates a piece of technology that strands another species to live a life of being stranded in space. But he does so at the behest of Starfleet. Okay, so I know that the way that the audience is hearing me right now, it's a very emotional response, and it is, because I believe and uphold personally the tenets of Starfleet. And when I'm watching this episode, and when I'm watching that technology pierce, physically pierce this alien, this tardigrade, to do what it needs to do, is forcing this alien to do what Starfleet wants it to do in order to win the war. Does that necessarily mean that Starfleet is still Starfleet? Does that mean that it's still the Starfleet of exploration and respecting the cultures of other sentient beings and moving forward with their mandate of becoming a force of positivity and good? This is the most probably controversial point in social media and Star Trek right now, because it's torturing a being in order for it to win the war against the Klingon Empire. That's something that has never been seen in Star Trek, ever. So what do you guys feel about it? I mean, I know how I feel about it. What do you guys feel about it?
I think Kyle's onto something here. I think that we are, this is what I like about the show, is that it can take these chances. We had just talked about how Orville doesn't have a prime directed, so therefore it can do a similar thing, where I think that here during wartime, all bets are off. Certain rules and regulations don't apply. Where in this case, we may not have the prime directive completely put in place yet. And that right now they're fighting for survival and exploration here, and I think that with this kind of leeway, it will allow the producers and the actors and all the creative force behind Star Trek Discovery to take risks and do things like you had just mentioned we've never seen in Star Trek before, and I think that's what's really kind of interesting and kind of freeing about watching Star Trek Discovery. So, Kyle, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this, because I think there's an interesting dichotomy going on here, because what you're seeing in Star Trek and what Starfleet is doing, but you're also seeing the evolution of the Michael Burnham character. Let's think back to the episodes we've seen so far where she's kind of put aside regulations at times to do what she thinks is best, what her logic is telling her to do. And it even happens in this episode where she uses her old shipmate, talking nice to him, talking him up, only for him to figure out, wait a minute, you're just trying to use my ability to detect
Saru.
Saru, as if it's a bad situation or not. You're not really being kind to me. But we see it towards the end of the episode when she sees the torture that Ripper is going through, her thinking is changing. Mm-hmm. And she's developing a little bit more of what appears to be a more of a conscience about these things. So it's kind of interesting as you see Starfleet make this darker turn. She's coming from a place of kind of darkness and maybe realizing her methods need to be changed a little bit. So it's an interesting dichotomy, I think, between the two right now.
Is she discovering?
Yeah, that could very well be.
Yeah, that's an excellent observation, Kyle. I love that. That's really cool. Well, those were really cool things to pick from that episode of Star Trek Discovery. The butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry. And just one little shout out I want to mention. I love this kind of little Klingon love connection going on here. I thought that was kind of cool. A little character development into those two
Well, I mean, there's an interesting subtext to this story. I mean, I think, in my opinion, the primary story was what Burnham was trying to achieve in understanding the tardigrade Ripper. And what this alien species could do. I mean, when we finally saw the raison d'etre, or the culmination of her studies, we're like, wow, that's really important. But there's the Klingon subtext to this. And with Vok, Son of None, we're seeing the political machinations of the Klingon Empire, something that we actually haven't seen in Star Trek ever. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen the Klingons are like, we are honorable. We are a house of honor, blah, blah, blah. You know, but at the same time, though, we are seeing the forging of the 24 houses, or which house is going to reign supreme. And it seems like there's one house, Kahl's house, that's going to be the house that may be the one of the 24 houses that is the dominant house that allows us to see, say, like Kor or Kang or Koloth later on in the original series, because the way I see it, Kahl, House of K, if you will, is going to be the dominant house. But I love the actor who plays Vok, Son of None, and I love this whole kind of subterfuge that's happening and the political machinations of the Klingon Empire. It's funny that it's more human than the human side of Star Trek that we're seeing.
That's a good point. Yeah. And I got to mention one other thing. How cool were those medical uniforms?
The best.
Those white uniforms looked fantastic. I see some future cosplay going on here.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really, really good discussion on Star Trek Discovery. But I think it's time to go into our next segment, Norm. Now, if I were to tell you, there's this kind of inside joke among Star Trek fans. Norm, what would you say is the best Star Trek movie of all time?
For me? There are two answers.
Well, I know what your real answer is, but I want the joking answer.
The joking answer for the best Star Trek movie of all time is Galaxy Quest.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah. Star Trek fans love Galaxy Quest. And of course, there is a little bit of Galaxy Quest inspiration coming from the Orville as well. But we have a really fun segment here on Discoville, and it's called It's Time to Activate the Omega 13.
Activate the Omega 13.
Because we are huge Galaxy Quest fans, we love the idea of the Omega 13 device. Because when it's activated, the Omega 13 allowed a short span of time to be rewritten. So, in either Discovery or Orville, you can only choose one. Them's the rules here for Omega 13 device. Only choose one of these episodes. Was there a particular scene or event that made you either rewatch it or want to rewrite it? Norm, I'm going to start with you.
My particular special pick for the Omega 13. It makes me laugh every single time I think about it. It's when technically, quote unquote, Malloy's leg falls out of the ceiling.
So we're talking, your choice is not Discovery. It is the Orville.
Yes, it is the Orville.
Okay.
Because I'm not exactly sure if that leg is Malloy's leg. In my opinion, I think that Isaac actually took the time to synthesize a variety of different legs. Right?
To figure out which one's his.
And wouldn't it be funny if that somewhere along the line in a future episode, a leg just falls out of the ceiling somewhere?
Did you notice when Alara picks up the legs, pick up the leg. She kind of swings it and it hits Mercer in the chest.
Right.
And she walks out.
It's not amputated at the same place. Cause anyway, in my opinion, I love that joke. I love the whole through line that Isaac went to the nth degree and anesthetized Malloy and took his leg, and the leg just fell out of the sky. you know, it's hilarious. It's worth rewatching again. That's my Omega 13 pick for both of these episodes.
Well, I think Kyle and I have a similar scene. So basically, you are rewatching. You're not rewriting a scene.
Right. I'm rewatching this. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because in the Omega 13, you can either rewatch or recreate.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I'm gonna let Kyle jump on a little bit more. But I really, really enjoyed the Dark Matter scene. I had to watch this over and over again because I really liked the special effects. I thought it was fascinating. It reminded me of an episode of Star Trek Next Gen where there are these null space voids they had to... Picard. I think Picard went out in a shuttle and kind of led the way, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that we got to see Charlize Theron's character try to gain their trust by navigating them through this. And I think this was one of the things that you liked. So this was one I would basically not rewrite, but I would rewatch it. What about you, Kyle?
Okay. Well, first of all, I do agree with both of you. Great things for rewatching. And I just got to throw up to both shows real quick. Absolutely amazing effects this week.
Oh yeah.
I mean, but for me, I agree with Kevin on the rewatch, but I'm also going to go with the battle scene in Discovery when Discovery just pops out right in the middle of the battle and just takes on those Klingon birds of prey. That's probably one of the best battle scenes I've seen in Star Trek in a very long time.
Right. Good choice. So like we're doing a bunch of rewatching then.
when Spore drove into Korv Antu and it dropped into protecting the colony planet for the dilithium crystals. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay, cool. Well, that has been our Activating the Omega 13 segment.
I love saying that. Isn't that fun?
It is. Activate Omega 13. Yeah. Well, we're going to go into our last segment here on Discoville, covering Star Trek Discovery, the Orville. Yeah. It's our Subspace Signals, trending social media topics. Topic today is the Orville and Star Trek Discovery seem to be constantly compared to one another. One is not Star Trek in the title, but is in spirit. The other is just opposite. So here's our thoughts on the matter. And also, guys, and Norm, I'm going to have you go first here. I want to ask you guys where you personally feel, and I'm going to have you guys choose right now. I know you guys are both liking them, but what do you like more, the Orville or Star Trek Discovery? So Norm, I'm going to start with you.
Personally, I love the Orville more. I know that's probably going to be like shocking for Star Trek fans to hear, but what I love about the Orville most is that the Orville most makes me laugh. That's probably the easiest way to describe it, is that I love Star Trek Discovery and I love what it's presenting. And it's very dark and it's very dramatic and it's very poignant. But at the end of the day, I have a very dark, not dark, but very serious day. You know, it's like my day is very serious, you know, and my life is, it has a lot of serious modes to it. But I want to watch a show that takes me away from all that. And I think that in entertainment, I think the entertainment that wins at the end of the day is the entertainment that just makes you laugh. It just takes you out of your day, you know? And I think it's fun. I think that the Orville is fun. It has fun things to address. It has the Star Trek drama that I want, but at the end of the day, it makes me laugh. So I think in this race right now, the Orville is winning for me.
What about you, Kyle?
You know what? I have to agree with Norman. The Orville is winning for me. And it's, again, we love both shows, but I agree with Norman so much. Everything we turn on today, whether it's social media, television, papers, whatever, everything is such a dark and heavy place. And the Orville is just an hour of fun and an hour of just pure joy of escape. And I think that's what makes the Orville just stand out. And we need more like it. But it's just, it's perfect, I think, for what we need to escape right now.
That's an excellent point. I couldn't have said it better myself, guys. I'm with you there. I'm enjoying Orville more. I enjoy Star Trek Discovery for many reasons, but it is a darker show. It's tough, but it's gritty too, and I like that. But there's something about Orville, like you said, Kyle, that is just a good hour of fun to watch. And I can't wait for the next scene. I can't wait for the next, you know, character development. I can't wait for the next guest star. And it's so funny because I'm loving it because it's giving me what I really loved about Star Trek, but I'm also loving it because it's giving me more than I got out of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And specifically I'm referring to like Deep Space Nine and Next Gen, the shows that, that we, and of course Voyager, the shows that we followed from, the late '80s through the '90s. Yeah, for me right now, Orville is just, it's hitting a home run for me, and I really hope that it keeps up. And it's amazing that we're, was it 4 or 5 episodes in right now, and there has not been a stinker episode. They've all been good, all been really, really good. And when I look at social media and such right now, I've seen people, hardcore Star Trek fans, say, I don't like the new Discovery. Orville's my new Star Trek. And then, of course, I've seen, oh, people think that Orville is silly, you know. And I just want to say, if you're on that, If you're on that plane, give Orville another chance here, because it is really, really good science fiction. The drama is fantastic. I mean, when you look at the end of the episode with Priya, you know, he orders the destruction and she disappears. You know, there was no happy ending there, you know, and she didn't apologize. I love the fact that she didn't apologize. She stood by her guns, and Mercer made the choice to basically make her disappear. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of thing, it's like they don't take the easy way out, and that's what I love about that. And they're able to still find humor in stuff that I love. And I love the throwbacks to the pop culture that we love today, because that's stuff that we'll still be enjoying hundreds of years from now. So I really, really like that. So Kyle, you got one to finish up something?
Yeah, just a quick point on the Orville too. My father, who, you know, he's not a big into Phantom stuff, but he likes what he likes. But he is absolutely in love with the Orville, and he has got the Orville actually set to record on his DVR.
So, wow, that's big for him. That's great. That's really, really cool. Well, I wanted to ask you guys, as we wrap things up here, regarding the latest episode of Discovery and Orville, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with everyone here on Discoville? Norm, I'm going to start with you.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about in terms of the fan community is that the Orville and Star Trek Discovery can exist at the same time. You know, there isn't a zero-sum game here. It's like, it's not that Star Trek Discovery has to win and Discovery has to lose, or vice versa. Like, the Orville is Star Trek that should have been Star Trek and should be Star Trek all along, and this is the way that things were in the 1990s, and it should be, you know, continued now. And how dare Star Trek Discovery be dark and depressing and this and that? They're two different things. I wrote something on a social media page, and I'd like to repeat it here. Personally, and this doesn't represent every single person's feelings here on the Fandom Podcast Network, especially for Kevin and Kyle and concerned, but I love the Orville. I really do. I love the Orville. I love Discovery. And I think that both are being given a grave disservice being dissected en masse in total and using the most non-contextual elements to describe them as a whole, meaning that you're going to pick apart this piece or that piece in very specific arguments. The Orville is indeed not Star Trek. It's not Star Trek. The Orville is the Orville. Nor is it Galaxy Quest. Galaxy Quest is Galaxy Quest. It's a very specific thing. But Star Trek Discovery, the Orville, and Galaxy Quest, they're homages of genres and ideas that science fiction, and especially when it comes to the Orville, Seth MacFarlane loves. Discovery, Star Trek Discovery is Star Trek. It's legitimately and legally is Star Trek. So Discovery is Star Trek because the title says it is, like it or not, from a contextual point of view, but it's Star Trek. You can't dispute the fact that it's Star Trek. It's labeled Star Trek. It's inspired by Star Trek canon. It is Star Trek canon, and to enjoy it, you can't slavishly adhere to it as Star Trek. Okay, so it's a property of CBS. It has the licensing and trademark of CBS. So it's legally Star Trek. The Orville and Star Trek can exist in the same time. They can't exist in the same fandom. They can't exist in people's hearts and minds. Okay, so both shows are on the air. Both shows have the same spiritual context. They have the same audiences per se. And they have the same identity in a way that they are the spiritual successors of Star Trek. Okay, but how many times do we have to hear naysayers photon torpedo them to death? How many times do we have to hear naysayers like say, one is this and one is that? So in my opinion, to wrap this all up and to get off my Starfleet soapbox or my Orville soapbox, Star Trek Discovery and the Orville, okay? They are what they are. Enjoy them for what they are. And just enjoy them. Don't compare one against the other. Just enjoy them for what they are and move forward with your lives and knowing that you have something in entertainment that actually brings you joy.
Well said, Norman. Well said. Kyle, what about you? What are your closing thoughts on these two episodes?
Well, I don't know if I can top Norman's filibuster there, but
I can filibuster for many, many, many centons.
But I will echo his sentiments on one thing. We have two great shows on television right now. One obviously is on CBS with their All Access, and we have the Orville on Fox. They are two separate things, and they're aiming to be two separate things. And it's something with everybody these days. Everything has to be nitpicked apart down to the smallest micron. And it's something that's across our world. And it, step back, people. Enjoy it. Be glad we have it, because there was a time where we would have never had anything like this going on. So enjoy it. Just let yourself escape. Let yourself go laugh with the Orville. Get caught up in the mystery and the darkness of what's going on Discovery, and just enjoy having something that can take you away from everything right now and just give you an hour of happiness. And then don't sit there afterwards and go, well, this, and this, and take away from your own enjoyment. Just enjoy what's in front of you. These are two great shows in science fiction on totally different levels, in totally different places, but they're hitting it out of the park right now for completely different reasons. Enjoy that. And because I think they're both going to go on for a good while. The Orville's ratings have been strong and steady. I think it is going to get renewed. I think CBS has a lot of plans for Discovery. And with it being in the CBS Access universe, that gives them a lot more playroom to do things with it. So we're in for interesting rides and enjoyable rides. Go enjoy it.
All right. Well said. Well said. I just want to say that I love them both for many, many different reasons. And it's funny because even though I am favoring the Orville right now, I really enjoy Discovery because of it's brand new Trek. I have no idea what to experience or expect out of this experience because there's just so many new things that are happening that I haven't been expecting, and it's wonderful. And I love that about Discovery. And, you know, I just, you know, like Orville, like you guys have, said that, it's just a really good hour of fun adventure television with a really good cast. And I'm really, really excited about it. So that's one of the things that we wanted to convey with this Discoville podcast is that, we're positive people here at the Fandom Podcast Network. And, we're not going to nitpick, we're not going to try and be negative. We're going to find the positive side of this wonderful programming that we have for both Star Trek and the Orville. And we're going to continue that. And if you want to continue to hear good positive outlook on fandom and these shows, please stay with us because we're really, really excited about this podcast. I just also want to mention, too, regarding Star Trek Discovery, one of the things I love about my CBS All Access Pass that I paid for is that you get some other great programming, and I'm really enjoying the After Trek program that you get, which is hosted by Matt Myra. And they're getting some really cool guests on there. This recent episode, they got Mr. Captain Lorca himself. one of our favorites, Norman, Jason Isaacs, because we know him from, obviously not from just Harry Potter, but he is also Highlander alumni. Mm-hmm. And they also had Doug Jones on, who plays Saru. And it's really cool to see these guys just hanging out, being comfortable and talking about it. And so that is a really cool thing that you get with CBS All Access. So, before I go too, I just want to mention too that Arbor Day next year is Friday, April 27th.
Happy Arbor Day.
Well, thank you guys for talking a little bit of Discoville here and showing some love for both the Orville and Star Trek Discovery. But we also have some other great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We have a large variety that we're all very, very proud of. And of course, Norman, you and I are co-host of Blood of Kings, and we were very excited because this is our Highlander podcast. Mm-hmm. We had a very special guest come on just recently.
We had the opportunity in the pleasure and the honor of actually interviewing Adrian Paul. Adrian Paul is Duncan MacLeod of Highlander, the television series. And there isn't really a bigger icon aside from Christoph Lambert, who played Connor MacLeod in the Highlander universe. So we had the honor and privilege of having him on and having Adrian talk about the Sword Experience, his Peace Fund organization, and his future plans on being able to connect with the fans in very interesting ways, because the Sword Experience is growing, it's evolving, and it's something that's actually really fantastic, and so is the Peace Fund organization. So I hope that a lot of the fans enjoy what we have, we're able to offer them in this particular interview. Yeah.
Oh, we're really excited about that because we will be seeing him very soon at the Highlander 25th Anniversary Gathering at the Crown Plaza in Los Angeles, October 20th through 22nd.
That's Kyle, surreal. That's surreal.
I know, isn't it cool? Kyle, you and I co-host Culture Clash, our weekly fandom show, and we're going to be talking about some things that's happened this week, specifically a new Blade Runner film and also a new Star Wars trailer, buddy.
Dude, there's things going on this week. I thought it was a quiet week. We're going to take the week off,
no.
Right?
No.
Yeah, no.
It is the one night of the week where all nerds who are not football fans were forced to watch football, and that's when the trailer was premiered. And, of course, tickets went on sale. I've got my tickets, so I'm really, really excited.
I got mine. We're going to be talking a lot about a lot of things on Culture Clash because there's a lot of other little pieces of news. I know you and Michael Morris have to be a little excited about that new Pacific Rim trailer too.
Yes, Pacific Rim trailer. Yes. Well, speaking of Blade Runner, we also have Couch Potato Theater. These are those films that you love to watch while you're on TV and you're channel surfing, and the movie comes on that you love. Even though you might have the Blu-ray or the DVD sitting on your shelf mere inches away, you will still sit on that couch, become the potato, and watch it. And recently, we recorded the Blade Runner retrospective. We had our friend Alan R. Ryan, of course, Davis Grayson, and yourself, Kyle, talking of the original Blade Runner. And then touching a little bit about what we were expecting to see of the new Blade Runner, which we will be, of course, covering on Culture Clash. And also, too, we recorded a Buffy special in time for Halloween. Right, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. We had yourself and, of course, our good friend Aaron Gill, who is a massive Buffy expert, I must say.
Oh, she drops some major Buffy knowledge.
But yeah, we're going.
I wish I was there. I have Buffy knowledge. I wish I was there.
Oh. We had a lot of fun talking Buffy, and we're going to make it a very special Halloween time warp. So watch for that coming on Halloween. And I think, Kevin, it might have inspired another idea, which we will tell people about a little bit down the road, or we might keep very hush about it, shall we say.
I see what you did there. Yes, yes, yes. So yes, that Buffy is the time warp. And speaking of time warp, we also have another time warp episodes right now called the 1987 The Movies. And we've done three of four. We've talked about some great films coming out of 1987, of course, including Adventures in Babysitting, RoboCop, Princess Bride, Dirty Dancing, and among among some other great films, and we're going to continue that throughout the rest of the year. And then, of course, our friends over at the Good Evening Podcast, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with our hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris, talking about the master of suspense himself, Alfred Hitchcock. And last but not least, we have the End Zone. It is football season. Kyle and I are big football fans, and we are now weekly throughout the football season giving you an update of what happened last week, a preview of the next week, and giving you the best mediocre fantasy football advice.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry about Derek Carr, dude.
Hold on. One more time. Undefeated.
Yes, Kyle is a Chiefs fan, and I have to hear about it every week.
And thank you to Alex Smith for crushing it like every week.
Well, I want to thank you guys again for coming on, and it's fun to talk Discoville with our love for Star Trek Discovery and, of course, Orville. And thank you guys for coming on. I'm Kevin, and on behalf of my co-pilots, Norman and Kyle, thanks everyone for listening and joining us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Discoville. Hailing frequencies are now closed. Goodbye, everyone.